Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Good morning. I'm Holly Hennebry, the Ministry Council Shepherd for Pastoral Care, and Paula has graciously invited me to preach this morning. In this morning's Gospel, with the parable of the Good Samaritan, it's particularly poignant to me. The crushing violence of the last month, Orlando, Istanbul, Alton Sterling, Philando Castile, Bangladesh, Dallas. The world's brokenness is heart-wrenching. Jesus' parable is a reminder to us of the ways in which we can keep the greatest commandment. The word Samaritan has a very different meaning in today's modern lexicon than it did in Jesus' time. Today we know Samaritans as ordinary people who show extraordinary care for their fellow man. Today we name churches and hospitals after the Samaritan of the parable, and the term is synonymous with hero. However, the parable is actually more complicated than the story of a man rendering aid. In Jesus' time, a Samaritan was anathema, reviled due to disputes over theology and liturgy beginning in 722 BCE with the Assyrian occupation. This same dispute, sadly, is alive in conflict today between Israel and Palestine. When we look more deeply at Jesus' words, we see that beyond being a literal thoroughfare, the Jericho Road stands for suffering. Anywhere that people are robbed of our dignity, our health, our love, our basic needs, of our humanity. As we examine the characters in this gospel, keep in mind the words of Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Mary Lynn Robinson, who stated, "We are all painfully aware that the most telling indictment of Christianity is our persistent failure to distinguish identity and adherence from actual lived faithfulness." Jesus' parable has several players. Who might you identify with? The lawyer, educated, clever, and ready to challenge Jesus and put him on the spot about just who his neighbor is. His first question was, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" A question he already knew the answer to, being a devout Jew and reciting the law twice daily. His answer when Jesus asks him what is written in the law is, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." This is the correct answer as well, and what Matthew's gospel tells us is the greatest commandment. However, this is where the lawyer misses something key. He's so intent on his challenge of Jesus that he fails to admit that he could never love this perfectly, that he would struggle and fail as an imperfect human being. Here he misses the opportunity to say, "Lord, I cannot be perfect. I know I'm going to miss the mark. How can I inherit if I can't love this way?" Here the lawyer missed the opportunity for hearing a message of grace, love, and mercy because his ego got in the way. Here he might have implored Jesus for the strength to love the other. Instead, he chooses to further challenge Jesus by asking, "Who is my neighbor?" He sounds pious and he seems to want to get things right, like most of us. But what he is really doing is asking Jesus, "Who is not my neighbor?" He's trying to establish boundaries so that he can love only the people it is comfortable to love, like his family, his friends, and other Jews, the people who matter to him. This qualified love is in opposition to who God is, a God for the whole world, not just the convenient few. Our next player is the victim. Set upon by brigands, beaten nearly to death, robbed, stripped of his clothing, and left for dead in a ditch. This character, mute and dying, represents us at our weakest, powerless, and in need of mercy and grace. Most of us have had moments where we have been in that ditch, broken and deeply in need. Indeed, the Jericho Road may be found in your home, among family, or in your workplace. Enter the priest. As we see him approach in our mind's eye, we're filled with hope. Here is a man who lives the law, who will tend and care for our wounded traveler. He's aware of Leviticus 19:34, where the law demands that he care for the stranger as he would himself. He's a pillar of the faith, learned and powerful. Surely he will help. Surely. Alas, no. Not only does he pass by, he passes by on the other side. He does the opposite of what is commanded. He ignores the situation. Some commentators have said that he did this because if he were to touch a dead person, he would become ritually unclean and could not take part in his duties to the greater congregation. Some say that he was worried about the injured man being part of a trap and that he too would be a victim. The Levite, a man who was a religious official, deeply knowledgeable of the law, and socially prestigious in the temple, comes along next, and he too crosses to the opposite side of the road, doing nothing to help. Was he too worried about ritual impurity or being victimized? Was he following the example of his boss who went before him? Was he just trying not to get involved? Did he gaze upon the wounded traveler and decide that he wasn't worthy of help because he was not of the same nation, color, class, or creed as the Levite? These are all plausible explanations, or perhaps excuses, but Martin Luther King points out an important shift in perspective between the ones who cross over and the Samaritan. In his 1968 speech, "I've Been to the Mountaintop," he says, "So the first question that the priest asked, the first question that the Levite asked, was, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? But then the Good Samaritan came by and he reversed the question. If I do not stop and help this man, what will happen to him?" Dr. King challenges us to flip situations on their heads and think not about ourselves first, but to follow the commandment to love the stranger. Finally, we consider the Samaritan. He was traveling along with purpose down the Jericho Road, just like us, writing up the 405 on a conference call, drinking Starbucks, answering emails when the traffic stops. And he came upon our victim, naked and dying. He didn't cross over like the priest and the Levite, who were perhaps more focused on their religious sense of security and purity than on the true meaning of the law. No, without regard to who the victim was, he stopped and cared for him, because who he was didn't matter. What mattered was that the Samaritan could help. He didn't stop and consider the man's race or religion. He didn't ask if he was gay or straight. He didn't look for a police badge or an insurance card. He didn't stop and give him a Band-Aid and a pat on the arm and call it good. He didn't offer to phone somebody else to help. He didn't make a donation to a charity that helps wounded travelers. He didn't vow to initiate legislation to create a multi-jurisdictional task force to police the Jericho Road. He himself, with all of his available resources, helped. He anointed the man's injuries with his provisions of oil and wine. He used his own clothes to bind his wounds. He put the man onto his animal and presumably walked instead of rode the miles to the inn. When he was at the inn, he purchased a room, not so he could dump the man and leave with a clear conscience. He stayed with the man, caring through him throughout the night, and offered the innkeeper the equivalent of 1 month's worth of rent for lodging and care, and promised to pay for whatever this stranger needed on his return to check on the man's welfare. He provided the man with radical, glorious, generous, unselfish love. The Samaritan acted in faith with a heart of love, expecting nothing in return. As Christians, we know that we honor God Himself when we honor another human being, affirming the value of their dignity, life, peace, and safety. Jesus gives us clear instruction on this point. If we fail in our love toward others, it's not because we don't know better. This parable is not so much about how we understand the word neighbor, but what is meant by the word love. Jesus defines the neighbor not as the object of love, but as the one who acts lovingly. If we all fulfill the law to love one's neighbor, then that love becomes reciprocal in a delightful version of what goes around comes around, as each person honors their side of a shared bond. The word love has as broad a definition as we have insight and compassion to give it. As Christians, we are called, in fact commanded, to know that it is love that matters. Love is the vehicle for mercy, grace, and compassion, and the ultimate weapon against injustice and suffering. We are called to be blinded by love, to love without fear, prejudice, or preconception. One of the ways we love at St. Francis is through our pastoral care ministries. The parishioners loving their neighbors through this ministry provide meals for families in crisis, cards filled with prayer and encouragement, regular visits to the sick and infirm, private prayer, intercessory prayer during every Sunday service right over there in the nascent chapel. And finally, the gift of the shared Eucharist for those who cannot join our church family. If any of these are ways that you're feeling called to love your neighbor, I encourage you to speak to Paula, Peter, Hank, or myself about the ways your desires and talents can be of service. At the end of the Gospel, Jesus asked the lawyer who he thinks was the neighbor in the story. And the reply is, the one who showed him mercy. So I end this sermon about the Good Samaritan who gave radical, generous love with the words of the greatest Samaritan, go and do likewise.